Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I am going to get right into it today. I'm really excited. I have one of my friends from the restaurant industry who I have known for quite some time now, back when she used to live in New York City. Now she runs the wine program for the Spiaggia complex of great restaurants and cafes and over in Chicago. She, in 2016, was a Food and Wine Sommelier of the Year, one of the Sommeliers of the Year, 2016. She won the Rudd Scholarship, or the Rudd Award, for the top score of her advanced sommelier exam through the Court of Master Sommeliers. She has worked with some of the best chefs in the country, including Thomas Keller and Greg Kuntz and Gordon Ramsay. And now she is with Spiaggia and running the program there. Her name is Rachel Lowe. She is my friend. And I'm really excited to get into this with you. We've known each other for a long time. And your wine list is just awesome. I look at it and it's like all of my favorite wines as well. But we met back in the when you were doing the NYU Food Studies program, and I was doing that too. Did you find that was something that was useful for you? You know,
It was useful in a lot of senses, in that it got me to New York City.
Yeah.
And opened my eyes to, I mean, I worked in a lot of restaurants, as you know, while I was going to school there, and met some great people, including yourself. Some of the classes were really great. Fabio, for example.
Oh, the best. Fabio Parsecoli.
Yeah, he's great. And then some were less than great. I mean, I think it was it's a program that was still in developmental phases. And
we were kind of the very expensive guinea pigs.
We were. It's true. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great experience, but I think it's probably fine-tuned more now.
Okay, you worked at some great restaurants in New York. You worked at with Gordon Ramsay. What brought you over to Chicago? Why did you make the move back to the Midwest where you're from?
I liked Chicago. I missed Chicago. I was ready to leave Napa at that point. So I ended up working my way back and getting...
Oh, that's right, because you stopped in Napa first.
Yeah,
I moved... Before.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. I was in Napa for 2 years after New York, and then moved back to Chicago in 2010.
And so, you worked for a little while at the Trump Hotel.
I was the beverage director at the Trump Hotel for 2 years.
Do you keep in touch with some of the people there?
I do.
How do they feel?
Everyone's long gone that I know.
Okay, yeah.
Or 1 foot out the door. So, yeah, I don't know.
I've never been to the Trump Hotel Chicago. Is it like gold plated and marble? And
it's pretty blingy.
It's pretty blinged out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful property.
Yeah.
The rooms are awesome, but I'm glad that I'm no longer affiliated.
Yeah. I mean, there must be like really good people who actually work, you know, but I have to like be reminded every day when they get to work.
Yeah. I think that there's been a decline of people booking rooms and stuff, from what I understand. Mm. And they actually just lost Thomas Lentz, their chef. He moved to Detroit to start a property there, which is pretty cool.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to... I have a lot of friends from Detroit. I was about to do a bad Detroit joke.
So. No.
It must be bad if you're moving
cool.
to Detroit.
No, it's up and coming.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
Detroit has a lot of cool things going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Okay, so now you're like looking over this incredible and imagine this amazing Italian-focused wine list. What I love is that you're able to go really deep into different regions. You have, in the great Italian spirit, you have a lot of outstanding champagne. And it's actually the first list that I've ever seen that has broken out the sub areas of Sicily, which I think is super cool.
Yeah. We do that. We break down the regions of Brunello, which the consortium doesn't really stand for, but the producers really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I mean, I inherited the list. It's 33 years old. So a lot of it is accumulated throughout the years. I can't take credit for all of it. But I like adding to the up-and-coming regions like Sicily and Sardinia and the south, and expanding it as best I can. And then obviously just the champagne is awesome too, all mostly growers. Piedmont is one of the biggest champagne-drinking regions in the world, which is funny, awesome. So
yeah. And what did you do when you came on? Like, where are the like Rachel kind of signatures in the list? What changes did you make?
Well, I wanted to be careful and respect the heritage of the restaurant. So, like I said, expanding some of the cooler up and coming regions that way. The pairings for the tasting menu, I do global pairings now instead of all Italian. So I usually try and feature a different country with each course. So right now we have a British sparkling rosé for the first course, for example.
That's cool. So I just read that this year there's going to be 1 million vines planted in the UK.
Yeah.
1 million vines in this year. It's insane.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, the sparkling wine I'm featuring is a Digby, and it's really kind of interesting. Like, they're making it in Southeast England, and it's really good. So that's kind of a fun thing. But then we are offering high-end Italian pairings as well. So you can always get Italian pairings. And then in the cafe, we went from an Italian wine list to a global list. Mm-hmm. So I started with featuring mostly female winemakers there, but now I've just kind of expanded it to feature wines I just like. So,
and maybe that is like, that is the more modern thing, because in a way, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I feel like saying female winemaker, and I think this was like a big conversation recently where you don't say like female doctor, right? Like, you just assume that's like they're a good doctor or they're not a good doctor, regardless of the gender.
Yeah.
But I find a lot of, I tend to like gravitate towards a lot of like the women in Italy,
sure,
like Elisabetta Fordori and Elena Pantaleone and Giovanna Morganti and
Ocapinti.
Yeah. Like, they're just great, like one after another, like amazing winemakers.
They're awesome. So I mean, it's just supporting strong, cool people, more or less. So that's more what I developed it towards at the end, or now.
Yeah, but so your list at Spiaggia is like 90% plus Italian, and then some internet. How do you choose the international? Like, what's going to complement that Italian?
It just depends. What's really cool with the team is that they're very collaborative. So when we're developing a new tasting menu, I work with Chef Joe and Tony really in depth, where we taste the dishes. We bring out like 4 bottles of wine that we think might work, and we sit down and talk about it.
By the way, I just love the fact that at like a Michelin star restaurant, like 4 stars from all the Chicago papers and all that, and James Beard Award nominated, the chefs are Joe and Tony.
Yeah.
I love that. As a Joe.
They're
it makes
awesome
me feel
too
good.
they're probably, I mean, I've worked for a lot of chefs, and they're probably the best chefs I've ever worked for. I mean, they're the nicest, they're the coolest team, and also the most inclusive. And in that we work so collaboratively, it's pretty awesome.
What is that like, working collaboratively with? Are they like, they're working on a dish and they like, you taste it along the way and give feedback and open up some wine? Is that kind of?
Yeah.
And sounds awesome.
We open several bottles. We're like, yeah, this works, this doesn't. Usually Joe and I have to hash it out, because I'll be like, no, this dish needs to go after this dish because it's not in the right progression. And then he yells at me and then usually does it anyways. it's a fact. but they're great. I mean, we work really well together. I've been there about 3 years now, and the team has never been better. So
amazing.
Awesome. Yeah.
I was looking through your list and like trying to figure out like what your point of view, your style is. And I think it's just good wine. Because I'm looking, it's all over. Like, there's just like really quirky, like really cool stuff and just delicious, clean, pure stuff. Do you have like a theory for? I think it's just good wine. You just like good wine.
I just like good wine.
Whatever style it's made in.
Yeah, and I mean, people have asked me like, "What's your favorite wine?" And actually, last night even they did, and I'm like, "It's what's in my glass right now, like or what of the week." Like I can't. I don't think that way about wine. I just think it has to be tasty, and I'm fine with it. You know.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too. And on that note, we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of Rachel Lowe of Spiaggia Restaurant.
Thank you.
Okay, cool.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. But what better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
All right, we're back with Rachel Lowe, the wine director and sommelier of Spiaggia Cafe and the James Beard Award-nominated Michelin-starred Spiaggia restaurant in Chicago. I was saying before the break about how much I love your taste in wine. I just see all of my favorite wines on your list. But one area on your list that you go kind of deep on that I just can't get behind is Amarone. Did you know what I was going to say?
No, not
it was Amarone. Yeah, I'm not a big Amarone fan, but you go pretty deep on it. Tell me, like, should I like pay more attention to Amarone?
Not necessarily. I mean, the thing is the main wine sales, I would say, predominantly go Piedmont, Tuscany, and Veneto. So people love Amarone, and we do have a lot of business gentlemen coming in and spending money on wine, and a lot of people gravitate towards Amarone. So I like Amarone. Is it my favorite style? No. But I think it's great wine. So, and actually, I was just in Verona and Veneto. So,
Did you go for Vinitaly?
No, I was there with Bertani. It was a kind of an in-depth seminars and stuff.
Do you have a new love and at least appreciation for?
It's quite an appreciation for. It was really neat to see the terroir, how Lake Garda affects everything over there, and get to know the winemaker Bertani, and you know, it was really cool.
What was the oldest? Because they probably have some pretty deep libraries of Bertani.
We tasted back to the 60s. Wow. It was neat. And the wines age really well. Those wines are really awesome. And to hear the winemaker talk about how he's kind of pulling back on their style rather than getting more pasito, if you will. It was neat. He's a really good guy. So that was cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. Amarone's not my favorite style wine.
No, but I mean, it would be wrong of you to withhold it from people who are willing to spend a lot of money for it.
That's true. I mean, and there's Del Forno and Quintarelli and like some of the, you know.
And those are actually great ones.
Those are pretty awesome. We just had a Del Forno seminar with the Sun. So it was, that was really neat tasting all of those wines.
That's probably the most revered Italian wine that I know the least about is Del Forno Amarone.
Yeah.
I've just been closed-minded to it, and maybe totally unrightfully so.
Unrightfully
so. Thank you. You telling me that makes me want to now explore it a little bit more.
It's cool, and what was interesting to hear was that it's just basically their father, the two sons working in the winery, they don't let anybody else touch anything on the property. And it's just going to probably continue to pass down through their heritage forever.
That's pretty cool.
It's cool.
Unlike with Quintarelli, it seemed like there was maybe some chance that it might not continue to go on. And so I think we were all like waiting with bated breath to see what happened there.
Yeah.
But luckily, I think they sorted that out.
Yeah, I think so too.
Now, one area on the list that you go deeper than most places that I'm also really excited about is in Abruzzo. It seems like you have something of a love for Abruzzo and for Cerisuolo.
Yeah. Well, Valentini specifically is one of my favorite producers. I think the last time we were in New York, I was lucky enough to have an 07 Trebbiano that's from Valentini. It's amazing. Those wines are just insane. So cool.
I'm going to it's hard to say like the greatest, but I would put that like Valentini Trebbiano. I'd say right now I'm feeling like it's the greatest Italian white wine.
Do you have any other contenders to go along with it? Yeah, no, I mean, because, you know, the Chardonnays that big producers are doing, they're fine, but like there's nothing in texture or weight that like that stands up to that, I wouldn't say. And the Cerisuolo, the kind of rosé, is amazing too. Those wines are kind of like ethereal. They're insane.
And, you know, and on the Spiaggia website, maybe part, it seems like maybe it's part of your mission statement, is that great wines have some level of durability too.
Sure, right? Absolutely.
They're not just pleasurable, but they can last. And that Valentini is a Trebbiano that's 10 years old and is youthful. And the Cerisuolo, same thing.
Well, and similarly along same lines, Pepe, Medio Pepe, those wines that they sit on, they release back vintages for decades. And they are, speaking of durability, they're amazing and complex and age it so well. Like the Pecorino, even whites and things like that are awesome too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Are people like willing to drink? Like, what is your clientele like, other than the business gentleman who wants the Amarone? Are you able to? I mean, that's always something that's challenging, is that sometimes when people, I found that when people want to spend money on wine, they're not always necessarily able. Maybe they don't want something like Valentini Cerisuolo or Emilio Pepe Pecorino or something like that.
Yeah.
But then like maybe the more wine geeks who really like would love to drink those wines can't afford them.
Yeah. I can't say I sell those wines very often. They sit on the shelf. But, you know, I find that when you get a younger couple in, for example, that doesn't know Italian wine, but they're open to a conversation, I find that it's easy to sell them Sicilian wines, for example, because, like, Nerello, Mascalese, say Etna wines, I think that they have the same kind of texture as Pinot Noir, Grenache, and people can find that comforting. So it's easy to kind of cross sell that kind of a region with people who don't know Italian wines.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
And the quality there is just bonkers right now.
It's awesome.
Is there a place in Italy that you feel like strongly about that maybe other people are kind of ignoring, or some wines or grape that you're kind of getting behind? Because like the Nerello Mascalese is kind of having a moment right now.
It is. It's more in vogue than it used to be. And I'd still say it's still up and coming, but it's definitely becoming a darling. Sagrantino, I mean, I wish I could sell it more. I know it takes years to age, but it's something that I feel people could have an appreciation for, especially party. I've been really become a fan of a Sagrantino.
Party.
Yeah.
I'm learning things. I love it. I don't know this one.
So it's so good. And this current vintage is 2011, and it's still drinking it very accessibly now. So I don't know. It's a cool
very
region.
Tannic. Is it very structured?
No, usually Sagrantino is, but this particular wine is really just kind of lush and delicious. It's amazing. So that's a good region to think about. I don't think people do.
I don't think they. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I feel like with Umbria, it's like when you bring it up, people are like, oh, yeah, Umbria. It's awesome. But then like they don't actually drink the wines or have them on the list so much.
Right.
So that makes total sense.
Yeah. Or I mean, Alianico, things like that. People don't usually just gravitate towards them. But when they do drink them, I think that they tend to like them a lot.
Yeah. So it's just having that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then likening it maybe to something that's familiar. Because I think that's the big problem with Italian wines. People find it intimidating because they don't know. There's so many grapes that are unfamiliar to people.
It's true. It's hard. And then there's like the synonyms, or there's like something You know, I make a little bit of Cerasuolo, and even like I'll bring it to a wine director and they'll be like, oh, so it's Nero d'Avola. Like, no. And so even like for people in the industry, it's hard. The same thing with Montepulciano. Like, yeah. Oh, so it's Sangiovese. Like, no, this is actually the great Montepulciano.
Montepulciano. Yeah. Or like, yeah, Nebbiolo is Pico Tendro one place, Giovinazca another. It's like, gets very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough country to learn.
So what are you doing while you're in New York? You came here for a James Beard event?
Yep, we cooked at the James Beard house last night, which was really great. And we teamed up with Ferrari. So there was a sparkling wine paired with each dish, which was awesome.
Ferrari from Trento,
Trento DAC.
Not the F12.
No. Yeah. Amazing sparkling wines. I think some of the best outside of Champagne. And then other than that, we're just kind of eating and drinking our way around.
So as someone who's lived in New York and is back, are there like some places that you're definitely hitting up? Like, oh, I really need to go back to Casamono or,
I miss Casamono. That's a good call. I did that the last trip. This is now kind of where we're all hanging out and going where the chefs want to go and exploring together as a group, which is really cool. I've never eaten here, for example.
You never eaten at Roberta's?
No.
So. Oh, you're in for a treat.
I know. I've heard amazing things. That looks really good right there, actually.
Oh, yeah. might I also recommend stopping by the Four Horsemen?
I've heard in 10 Bells, too. Supposedly is really cool.
The Four Horsemen has the food to match the wine, too. Like, their food is excellent. Chefs will be excited about it.
So maybe I know Chef Tony loves Four Horsemen. So
oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah, he talked about us going. Is it Lower East Side? I don't even know where it is.
It's in Williamsburg.
It is in Williamsburg.
Yeah,
right here. Okay, we'll go. We'll go there next.
All right, you guys go to Four Horsemen, and then for you guys who are listening, go stop by and see Rachel Lowe at Spiaggia and Cafe Spiaggia in Chicago next time you're around. They have an outstanding wine list, and as you can tell, Rachel is an awesome person as well. Thanks so much for our engineer today, who was Vitor Hirsch. David is on vacation, probably drinking some great wine. I don't know if that's true at all, but I know he's not in the studio today. And thanks for everyone at Heritage Radio Network. This has been In the Drink. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.